Oh, great.
And I brought you a bed and books. Oh, thank you. I got a good interest on the book.
Just a second. This local news is being brought to you by Roto-Rooter.
I'm embarrassed to death to have kept them so long.
Oh, no problem. What is
well,
no, it's a bottle of fish and butter champagne.
Yeah.
Are you still doing the...
I'm working up there most weekends. I'm working up there both days next week.
Cindy, when we're talking, we're going to need to have you a lot closer. About a handstand for you. Maybe even closer than that, possibly. Michael's probably okay. He projects pretty well. So what are you doing nowadays? I keep reading things by Michael Modjeleski every now and then.
We're doing articles and traveling and more lecture programs, too.
Yeah. How's your photography coming along?
Oh, don't want to talk about it. It's great. I took an old part interest in specimens now. With all the development I've been doing. It's been real good. I've been learning a lot of things, and being out with the whales is amazing. It was kind of a control thing.
And these are big guys. Killer whales are 30 feet. We were out with the gray whales, and it's 50 feet. And we were in a 17-foot kayak. We were surrounded by our
This is going to be neat. This is going to be fun.
Plus all of the rest of Baja.
You got any tape on? Okay. The whole rest of Baja, too, is just amazing. How'd you happen to move down to civilization? Well, I thought you were enjoying your solitude up in Mount Leader.
Well, we still have it where we are, but it's a little bit closer. It was just too much of a drive back and forth, especially when we were.
Hey, thank you very much, Milt. It's 4 minutes after 10 o'clock, and you couldn't believe we're going to be talking about whales. I don't know if you listened this morning, but George and Milt were going back and forth with the worst puns.
About whales.
It was.
Oh, I'm so glad I missed it.
Be glad you missed that one.
Whale jokes, I guess. Maybe our guests have some whale jokes. We have Michael and Cindy Modjeleski with us. Great to see you. You both look just marvelous.
Thank you.
That Mexico suntan?
It is. Yeah, we worked hard on it. A lot of time lolling on the beach, running through the surf and whatnot.
Now, lolling on the beach and running through the surf doesn't sound like terribly strenuous whale watching to me.
In between times, no. We used to go out in the mornings. We'd be up about... sunrise around 6 o'clock, and we'd go out in the kayak till about noon or so, because then the activity would die off. And then we'd spend the rest of the day just on the beach and hiking around. And a few times we could go out in the evening around 4 or 5 o'clock, activity picked up again. But between, 12 and 4, there wasn't much. And it seemed the morning was the most time for the activity, early morning.
Now, this was where?
This is in Scammon's Lagoon in Baja, California.
Okay, now, did you go just on your own, Michael?
Well, I'd read a lot about it in various magazine articles, and it's very hard to get in there with a boat. You've got to apply for permission from the Mexican government, and they're very, very picky about what boats they let in. But in our favor, we took a kayak without an engine, and we did all the paddling. So without the noise of the engine and disturb the whales, they let us in under those grounds.
But even then, you had to have permission?
Yeah, you had to have the permit with you at all times, and they had a patrol boat that was checking, too.
Had you done much kayaking before, Cindy?
Oh, we'd had the kayak for about 2 years, and we'd done some kayaking, but nothing in open water like that. We'd done kayaking up in Berryessa, and down the Napa River we took it for the first time, a few things like that. And while I was in Canada a couple years ago, we had a friend's kayak. We did some couple days there. This is my first real experience out there. It began to hit me after about 2 or 3 days. What am I doing out here with these huge, 50-ton creatures, and I'm in this little 17-foot kayak in 100 feet of water? A few realities started to set in, but, yeah.
Well, that's right. It'll be interesting to find out what impressions you had as opposed to what impressions Michael had, because, Michael, we talked to you the first time we had you on the program here was a couple of years ago. I was telling Gordon the other day that you've been out kayaking and sporting around amidst the whales before up past Vancouver. But those were different kind of whales.
Yeah, I was up there with killer whales, which are actually the largest dolphins in the world, and they only go about 25 to 30 feet long, and they're much quicker. But when we were down in the lagoon, and it's a closed area that's sheltered from the Pacific, and you've got about 1,000 whales in a maybe 2 mile water surface area, so you can't help but miss them, whereas when you're up north chasing killer whales, it's just pretty much open ocean, and it's kind of hard to come by them. But when we were in the lagoon with them, at one point we paddled out and we were actually surrounded We had whales in front of us, behind us, and on both sides. And when they come up the spout, you tell yourself that they're friendly beasts. They're not going to harm you. When they come up and spout and you hear that noise and you see a big eyeball roll over and look at you and you wonder if they're planning sort of cowboys and Indians, if the Indians are surrounding a wagon train. But we had, you know, just peaceful encounters with them when we were there.
Well, maybe this was a little bit, you know, not old hat to you, but perhaps you'd at least had a little experience in this kind of a situation. Cindy, wasn't it kind of scary to you?
It was, but it was just so exciting, and you become so involved in the animals and what you're seeing and what you're, you know, involved in, that you kind of forget you feel you have to. Others will get in the way. But the whales were just, it was amazing. Half the time you just stand, you know, you would sit there with your mouth open going, oh, look at this, look at that. We really didn't know which way to look first, and, you know, he'd be pointing at a whale jumping out of the water, and I'd see a fin come up here, and a baby be over there with his mother, and there's so many things. You just forget
it. Well, tell me, how close did you actually get to the whales?
Close.
Well, at one point, Cindy was, well, the problem was she was looking through a telephoto lens, 200 millimeter. So the whales were far away, but they looked like they were right in front of her face.
They weren't that far.
So she would constantly be telling me we're too close, back away. And at one point, a whale and a calf came right next to us. And she said, all right, that's it, Michael. And she froze. She couldn't take the picture. And she said, let's get out of here. Let's back up. And I very calmly said, I can't. Where do you want me to put the paddle? Because if I would have stuck the paddle in the water, I would have hit the whale. So we pulled the paddles in and just sat there and drifted along.
Well, because mothers are very protective of babies. I don't think they, you know, actually do anything to harm us, but if they just kind of swish their tails to move us away, we'd be bouncing halfway across the lagoon.
But one problem is that the babies are very curious,
yeah,
and they'll approach you.
And how big is the baby?
And the baby is about 17 feet long when it's born. And they're curious, and they'll come right toward your boat, but you want to paddle away from them, even though you're tempted to make an encounter or touch them or whatever, because the mother won't know if you're friendly or if your intentions are otherwise. So we didn't want to take that chance.
Tell me, up close to a whale, that close to a whale, do they smell funny?
No.
Do they smell fishy?
No.
Well, actually, the killer whales didn't smell at all, but I noticed an odor of the gray whales because they've been fasting for about 6 months. And they do all their feeding up in the Bering Sea during the summertime. And then they take their migration down the coast and have their calves in Baja. And all that time, scientists seem to feel that they're not eating at all, that they're just into traveling and then delivering the babies or the calves.
It's kind of an extreme diet, isn't it?
Yeah, so I could smell a bit of an odor from, say, you know, living off of their fat or whatever. There was a bit of a difference.
Mm. What did they look like up close? So these are the gray whales, correct?
Yeah, these are the ones that have the barnacles, the big patches of white and gray. In fact, that's how they get the colors from all the barnacles that attach themselves to the whales' heads. And actually, they're a very primitive whale. They've been around for about 20 million years, and they haven't changed much in evolution. So when you look at that long jaw and the shape of their body, they look almost like a big reptile rather than a whale even.
What is their, can you see their skin, or are they completely covered with barnacles?
No, there'll be patches, mostly on the head, and then you'll have patches of smooth skin, you know, running toward the back.
What's the skin look like?
Sort of like a car tire. You know, a lot of them have scars on it, and they're not as smooth as killer whales and dolphins, because they're slower swimming whales, and therefore more parasites and barnacles can attach themselves.
I noticed on the baby whales, who are free of any parasites and barnacles, their skin was a kind of a shiny, dull gray color, but they had like bumps on it. You could just see there was kind of bumpy skin. It wasn't smooth at all, like the killer whales, like Michael said. The little babies were so cute. They had this little kind of snubbed forehead, and they were out just jumping all over the place. They had a great time.
How do they eat?
Well, from what I've seen, I've never, you know, watched them. They are bottom feeders, and what they'll do is they'll go down to the bottom of the lagoon or wherever they are and turn on the side, and they have baleen. They have no teeth. And then they'll just scoop up whole couple of tons of water and mud and whatnot, and the water and mud will filter out through the baleen, and they'll keep all the krill in their baleen. And that's
okay, what's baleen? See, we don't have television. Okay. We don't have any pictures here anyway, folks, so you'll just have to listen very closely.
Baleen,
what's baleen?
Baleen is, it looks kind of like, I guess the best way to describe it would be a broom, the straw on a broom, and it comes from the top part of their jaws. It's attached, and it's just like a big filter, and what they do is they'll scoop up water and mud and whatnot, and they'll just filter it all, they'll just push it out after they've ingested it, mm-hmm. and all the water and mud will go out.
Sort of the way a kid spits between his teeth.
Kind of, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the food, the microscopic food they eat is kept in there. And they can't ingest salt water, of course, so that all goes out with the mud.
Do they eat other fish?
No.
If there's small fish at the bottom that just happen to be there, they'll get trapped in the baleen.
Mostly they eat like little shrimps, little crustaceans.
And it's amazing that one of the largest animals on Earth eats the smallest, you know, the little shrimp and the krill, and yet they get so big just on that.
This also goes for the killer whale as well?
Well, the killer whale is a different story. He's got teeth and he eats everything that's in the ocean, including other dolphins and fish, and he's at the top of the food chain.
Seals.
And killer whales do attack gray whales. In fact, they'll wait at the entrance of the lagoon when the gray whales are going to swim north back up to the Bering Sea. In fact, they'll be going by in about another month in the springtime. And they'll wait outside the lagoon entrance and try to ambush the babies that are coming out. Because the babies have been in this protected lagoon for months, and then all of a sudden they're taking the big trip out in the open ocean. So the killer whales will, that's the one enemy that the gray whale has. But it was really spectacular to be in there. And they were doing a lot of spy hopping where they raise their head out of the water, like 20, 30 feet, and just stay up there for a few seconds and sink back down. And a lot of them were breaching, actually going right down to the bottom and just propelling themselves out of the water. And at one point, like I say, when we were surrounded by them, Cindy didn't know where to point her lens, and all of a sudden I heard the water start to gurgle from right behind me. And I said, Cindy, turn around and point your lens, but I didn't want to move and look because I'd rocked the boat and she wouldn't get a steady picture. So she turned around, she was sitting in the front part of the kayak, and all of a sudden I saw her head bend back and her eyes look up, and there was a mixture of fear and awe at the same time. And what had happened was, is a whale, it started to breach, came about halfway out of the water and saw our kayak there. And instead of crashing down to try to swamp us, he slipped back into the water, kind of put it in reverse in a hurry. But she was able to see this, and I kind of saw it mirrored in her face without seeing it myself. But she was so full of awe that she couldn't even get the picture. You know?
It was amazing to see something that big that close.
I think I would have been afraid it was going to come down on top of me.
Well, you know, for a second, it seemed that way to me, too. It, you know, we were just become so used to the whales. Michael said, oh, it sounds like a whale's breaching behind us because it jumped twice. And I said, oh, a whale jumping, no big thing. And when you think about it, it is really an amazing feat. But after days of being surrounded by it, you just take it, you know, for normal. And then I heard the second rush of water, like Michael said, and when I turned around, this whale had to be 30 feet out of the water and within maybe 40 feet of our kayak. And for a second, we made eye contact because I was staring at the whale and my head was just straight back on my shoulders. And it was like the whale did a register, aha, life form, don't smash it, and just very gently slid back down, which he didn't hardly even rock the boat when he went back in the water.
Well, I'm certainly glad, because we could perhaps not be talking to you here this morning.
Well, we would have been very wet, but I think we would have survived.
Would you?
Well, the boat might have tipped over, but...
Yeah, how far from shore were you at the time?
We'd only go off about maybe... I think at the most we were out about a quarter mile from shore.
Well, not that one day.
We were out in deep water, and but
had you been, you see, I'm kind of amazed. Of course, I should know better. Anybody who can live on islands up in British Columbia and go paddling around by himself up there is obviously dauntless. But it seems to me that you were taking awful risks.
Well, it is risky because you're out in a small boat, and it kind of backfires on you if you don't have an engine. The engine spooks the whales. You don't get close enough for pictures, but at the same time, that engine lets them know that that man is around. And when we were out in a kayak paddling silently, we got close for some great pictures, but at the same time, they didn't hear us coming till sometimes the last few minutes.
Yeah.
So it was a double-edged sword. We were really taking a risk.
Suppose you had been swamped, or, you know, and the boat, the kayak had tipped over. Do you really think you could have gotten back to shore?
Yeah, because the water wasn't very deep there. There were a lot of shallow channels, and that's where the whales go in to deliver their babies. Is they'll actually go in where they can put their flippers out on the sand and deliver the young in the very, very shallow water. So a lot of times we didn't have that much water beneath us. And if we would have gone over, I think we'd have been able to swim. Because it was very warm, too. Water temperature there was about 65 degrees, I think.
Now, plus a kayak would float. It just would pop back up to the surface. I would lose my camera equipment, which would be most upsetting, but...
But it was a beautiful area because you had desert and cactus that came right down the blue water. And just the contrast between that sand and, you know, those scraggly life forms with the soft blue sea and then the whales out there. It was a beautiful country.
Now, this is Scammon's Lagoon in Baja California we're talking about for the benefit of anybody who just tuned in, and our guests are Michael and Cindy Mojeleski. You said that the whales migrate from the north, from the Bering Straits, I think you said, down to Scammon's Lagoon and bear their young there and then go back north again. Does anybody know why they choose Scammon's? Just because it's protected again?
Well, actually, there's about three or four lagoons in Baja. Scammon's, San Ignacio, there's Magdalena Bay, and then they even go into the Sea of Cortez, and mainly because of the protection. And
but they breed in all those, or they...
Right. There's about, I think, 6,000 to 8,000 whales that go in and divide up into those lagoons. Mm-hmm. But there's great questions as to, do they use the same lagoon every year? And how do they navigate and find their way all the way down there? And how do they know when, okay, we've made it, and here's the entrance, let's slip in? You know, so there's science is really up in the air as far as...
When do they give birth?
It's usually right around January. They'll go down and deliver.
Did you see that at all?
Well, that's really secretive. In fact, I don't know if I'd want to get that close, because they really go way up into the channels to deliver their calves. But we were seeing a lot of calves that were probably just a couple weeks old, because the skin on their foreheads was real wrinkled. Just like if you're not used to the water and you sit in a bathtub too long, your fingertips will start to shrivel up.
So like and it was, prune babies.
Yeah, it was almost like seeing some prunes out there in the water. Yeah.
For heaven's sake.
But it's the only mammal that has a migration of 12,000 miles they swim every year. They're up in the Bering Straits feeding in the summer, and then every winter they come down to Baja. So it's about 6,000 miles each way.
Now, since whales are mammals, then the babies must nurse. Is it possible to see the babies?
Well, the water's murky there, but what we did see is from the surface, the mother will roll over on her side, put her flipper up in the air. The other flipper will kind of grab the surface to kind of break her down below, because the tide's always going back and forth. And then the baby will swim into the mother's side and nurse. And you can't actually see the baby sucking because of the water, but you do see that fin come out of the water and the mother stretch up. And the baby gains about, I think, 100 pounds a day. And the milk is just like cottage cheese. It's got a real high fat content. So they grow right before your eyes if you are out there watching them.
Just think how much food the mother has got to eat in order to produce milk for a baby that size.
Yeah, and then like I said, she hasn't been eating for about 4 months. Since she left the Bering Sea, they haven't been eating at all on the swim down, so somehow all that food has been stored in her body.
But you don't think they're not even eating while they're there then, so they're not...
No, because in the lagoon there isn't any krill, you know,
or
the shrimp.
Krill?
It's a little bit of shrimp. Just instead of the shrimp we go out and eat at a restaurant here, it's about half that size. Kind of a small shape.
I wasn't sure whether krill was a generic term for a whole bunch of little critters or just what it was. If anybody out there has any questions about whale watching in Scammon's Lagoon, or for that matter up British Columbia Way or anything else, our guests are Michael and Cindy Mojeleski, and we welcome your phone calls, 963-2991, 255-5866, and 644-2939.
What
an interesting experience. I want to know about, did you camp while you were out there, or just stay
We went with my dad, and his lady started had a VW van. So we'd camp right there, and we put out our tent, right next to us. We had plenty of room. Yeah, and then we went all the way down to the tip of Baja after that.
Well, the car motor burned out. It ran your tire, but because the octane is so low, and it's an air-cooled motor, so it's going to burn out the motor. You have to have a cold bag 500 miles, and then you just go on bus the rest of the way.
Baja,
Well, let's talk about, the whole general experience.
You drive down the road, you see little cars on the side of the road, people died.
There's loose cattle right on the highway.
Make your best deal. Well, it certainly looks as though it agreed with you. You do look fantastic, don't you?
I got a power call.
Okay.
And get $750 back.
Shrimply delicious.
My krill.
Krill.
We talked with Mary Tilden Morton 6 months or sometime within the past year. She had gone on a Smithsonian trip to Antarctica and was just absolutely crazy about the penguins. We had a really interesting program with her, and penguins eat krill too, I think. Do you know her at all?
Sounds familiar.
I don't know anymore. She's interesting. We've got to get together. Ray is out of town for about 5 weeks more. He's been gone for a week. He's back in Richmond, Virginia, taking some training for this new job he has.
What job?
Well, he's a security investigator with the government.
Oh, so
fortunately, as long as Reagan is going to continue his Department of Defense spending, we figure maybe Ray is in a fairly secure niche. But anyway, I thought, well, this is a chance for me. It's real fun to cook just for Jeff.
Here we go.
We're talking with Cindy and Michael Mojeleski about all manner of things, and you're welcome to join us too. Let's go to our Valley Line. Good morning, you're on KVON.
Good morning, Ann. And would enjoy very much seeing the whales myself. Do they not think that this unbelievable influx of humanity and people down in those lagoons can be disrupting to the whales?
Well, the thing is what has stopped that is the application for the permit. And I'd say for every 100 applicants, there's only one that's been accepted. And
makes me very happy.
Yeah, that used to be a problem. Before it was open season, and people were actually going down there and running right on top of the whales with their boats. And if you've seen Cousteau programs and that. But now the Mexican government has declared all those lagoons sanctuaries.
Oh.
And they're very, very picky about who goes in there.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
I'm glad she did point that out, because I had sort of wondered about that too, if humanity would interfere. You did say that you had to get a permit. How did you go about getting this permit, Michael?
Well, what you do is you write to the Mexican consulate in San Diego. It's probably the best place because they're closest to Mexico. And then they send it on to Mexico City. And in your permit application, you've got to state purpose of visit, who's going for crew, how many rolls of film you're going to take, how long you're going to be there, just spell out the whole thing, and then just cross your fingers. But because of my past history with lectures and doing educational environmental programs, they gave us the okay on it.
How far in advance did you have to apply for it?
Earlier the better. If you send it in about 6 months before, then you probably have a better chance, because right toward the end, when it gets toward November, December, looking for January, people just swamp the offices, so it's different then.
Are you going to be, you are a lecturer, and now you have all these lovely photos, too, that Cindy is taking. Are you going to be doing a new lecture series?
Well, I think I'm going to do a double feature with repeat the killer whales of British Columbia and then do the gray whales and show all of our slides that we took down in Scammon's Lagoon. Kind of do a whale evening, maybe Napa College.
Oh, we want to be sure to know about it when it happens. Let's go to line one. Good morning. You're on KVOM with the Mojeleskis.
I think you have already answered my question, where we can see some of this wonderful experience that you have. Since we cannot travel, you'll have to travel for it. Where can we see you?
Okay, well, it'll probably be at Napa College. We'll either rent the auditorium there, or we'll do it at Yountville, at Lincoln Hall, at the Veterans Home there?
Lincoln Theater, yeah.
Yeah, the Lincoln Theater. And that should be coming up within a month or so.
I tell you what, as soon as you know when it's going to be sure to let us know. We'll pass the word on to everybody, because your shows in the past, you've done the Killer Whales of British Columbia. You did that in a number of the schools here locally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think before I had even met you, my son was in junior high school, and he came home and he said, "Boy, we have a good show today."
And
it takes something to stimulate those 7th and 8th and 9th graders. Can be extremely critical audiences.
Yeah, that's it. If you pass the test with them, I think you're okay.
I think we'll have to mention, I know Ira Smith is always looking for interesting speakers for Kiwanis, and I think you've spoken to them before. So Ira's probably out there right now taking notes about this latest venture of yours. As far as the call of the person who was concerned about the environment and the whales themselves, you did have to get a permit. Would you say that it felt crowded? Were there numerous other people there?
No, I expected big crowds, but when we got there, I think there were only three other campers in the whole lagoon besides ourselves. And one group was two teachers and about 15 elementary students from Tucson, Arizona, that just get an annual permit, and they take a new class down there every year. And the kids were really going crazy being out in the boat close. But we actually had the whole lagoon to ourselves. Because one problem with getting there is you've got to have an off-road vehicle, really, to get back into the lagoons. And there's big sand pits where they can swallow up half of your car, and it's a real obstacle course. In fact, even driving the road, the Peninsula Road that goes the length of Baja, is a lot different than I thought. It's very narrow. You can't drive at night. There's cattle wandering around. There's huge potholes. You pretty much take your life into your hands when you drive down there. So that's another barrier between you know, crowds going down there to see the whales. It's just
it's
darn
not
tough
easily
to get
done.
To.
Mm-hmm.
No, not at all.
Well, what kind of, was there a campground, or were you just camping in the open? What did you do?
Well, you had beautiful sand dunes that kind of poured right down to the water, and you could just, you know, pull off, put your car right there and pitch your tent right by the, right over the lagoons.
What about water supply?
Well, that you had to pack in. And there was a town called Guerrero Negro, about 20 miles away from Scammon's Lagoon. And you would buy all of your fresh water right there, making sure it's purified.
I was going to ask
you about that. Because of Montezuma's revenge. Cindy got a little dose of that when we were there.
A little dose? Yeah. Most of the vegetables and fruits, you have to peel your fruits. And then the vegetables, they say, if you soak them in a gallon of water with a few drops of iodine or bleach in it to purify it, then rinse it real well. But it seems no matter what you do or how careful you try, you almost invariably get sick, you know, a little bit or a lot.
I wonder, somebody told me that if you started eating something like yogurt before going to some of these places, that it helps cut down on that. Did you ever hear that?
No. Never have.
Could
that
be, though, all the bacteria within it.
Yeah, I don't know for sure whether it really works or not. I figured you being an outdoors person, Michael, would probably know if that was indeed the case.
Yeah, but it's a different germ system.
Yeah.
We're used to one system here, we go there, it's a total change. And I've heard from the Mexicans that when they come here,
they get
sick.
What do they call it?
I don't know. That's what I'd want to know. George Washington's revenge or something.
We'll have to ask somebody if they have any idea, because if we call it Montezuma's revenge, it must indeed be something different that they... Well, interesting thought. Hadn't considered that.
So we drank a lot of beer and we avoided the water.
Yeah, what about your supplies in general? How long were the... I'm having trouble. I'm so excited. I'm asking questions in all directions. How long were you there?
In the lagoon, we were there, what, about 4 or 5 days?
Yeah.
I think, total.
Then we spent another three and a half weeks traveling up and down the entire peninsula. We went all the way to the tip, the southern tip, to Cabo San Lucas. And spent a day there and spent a few days in La Paz, and then just took the rest of the time going up and down. Most of the time we just camped on the beaches.
Well, nice. Perhaps we can talk a little bit more about this adventure after the ABC Network News. I'd like to know more about the traveling down there. Was it easily to find supplies? You know, what were the camping facilities and so on, that kind of thing. It makes you want to go, doesn't it, Gordon?
No.
No? You're not a camper, Gordon?
No, I'm a camper. I was just kidding. I would be kind of scared getting those close to whales. I could see where...
Well, that's another barrier, too, that eliminates a lot of people going down. You know, they go to Point Reyes, and from the lighthouse, they'll have a comfort factor watching whales. But a lot of people just don't want to get out that close. And I don't think I would either, except for photography and for the sake of science and, you know, learning about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we go out for those reasons, primarily.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't it make you wonder? You're wondering why you go, isn't it?
Really.
Makes you wonder if you go out to Point Reyes in another month or so, if you're going to see some of the same whales that you saw down there. I don't suppose you'd recognize them.
Well, the problem is when they come back, they take a more westerly route, and they don't seem to hug the shoreline as they do when they're coming back. And, in fact, they're hard to see at all.
We'll talk more about whales and tails and camping in Mexico, and you're welcome to join us. Please do stay tuned. We'll be back after the ABC Network News, which is coming up next. Our guests this morning on KVON are Michael and Cindy Mojeleski, and you, of course.
Here's the latest from ABC News.
Hey, anybody want a cup of coffee or a cup of tea?
The debate is about to get underway in the Senate.
What are you taking? Oh, you can come along and season it yourself.
This is a historic moment, as you obviously know. First time there's been a expulsion resolution before the Senate for well over 100 years. All of the others dealt with...